A year and a half after he shot and killed his girlfriend, athlete Oscar Pistorius stood before a South African court to discover his fate.
Mr. Pistorius, please stand up. Having regard to the totality of this evidence, in this matter, the unanimous decision of this court is the following. One, on count one, murder read, the accused is found not guilty and is discharged. Instead, he is found guilty of culpable homicide.
But how did it come to this? I'm Audrey Brown, and over the next hour, I'll be telling the story of the trial of Oscar Pistorius.
In lane seven is going well, but here goes Pistorius now. This is where he's at his strongest. Those blades he's wearing are state of the art, but it's his legs and his huge heart that make him so quick.
Just 2 years ago, Time magazine hailed Pistorius as the definition of global inspiration and one of the world's 100 most influential people. They called him the Blade Runner, and his face was on a billboard in New York's Times Square. There seemed to be no limit to his glory, which began at the Beijing Paralympics in 2008, where he won 3 gold medals.
Everybody in the bird's nest watching Oscar Pistorius. This could be very special indeed. Oscar Pistorius is champion, 47-51. Oh my goodness, is there ever
back in 1995, the American footballer O.J. Simpson's trial for the murder of his former wife defined the era of the 24-hour news cycle. Nearly 20 years later, the trial of Oscar Pistorius is certainly a contender for the most watched of the social media era. Oscar Pistorius inspired a nation and the world. In London, he became the first double amputee to compete in the Olympic Games. He reached beyond his physical disability. He was born without fibulas in both legs, and they were amputated below the knee before he could even walk. He endured the divorce of his parents and the early death of his beloved mother, Sheila. And except for a few flashes of temper, for which he apologized immediately, Oscar Pistorius was known as a nice guy. Then, on the morning of February the 14th, 2013, came the news that shocked the world.
The South African Paralympic and Olympic athlete Oscar Pistorius is facing murder charges.
He was arrested after his girlfriend was shot dead.
Tonight, Mr. Pistorius is in a police station. He's been visited.
Riva Steenkamp was a law graduate turned television presenter and model. Her beauty and his fame propelled them into the glamorous, gossipy realm of celebrity. The couple were in the early stages of their relationship when he killed her. In the early hours of Valentine's Day. They'd been together for around 3 months, and according to evidence given by Oscar Pistorius, he was besotted with her. Details of the shooting emerged quickly.
The shooting happened here early this morning at Pistorius' home on a closely guarded suburban.
Riva Steenkamp, a model, had been shot 4 times in the head and hand with a gun owned by the splinter.
And spread fast as they became available. Social media users tweeted and shared what was being spat out by journalists from all over the world, already on high alert to cover the demise of another South African hero, the ailing, aged Nelson Mandela. The trial of Oscar Pistorius created a platform from which to scrutinize South African society, still divided along racial lines 19 years after the official end of sanctioned white domination and black oppression. The so-called Rainbow Nation was praised for the dignity with which that struggle was fought, and a constitution that enshrined the dignity and human rights of all. Yet it still had shocking levels of poverty, inequality, and violence against women and children. The trial also seemed to expose another fundamental dissonance, this time in Pistorius's character. The former chief medical officer for South Africa's Paralympic team, Professor Wayne Derman, explained it this way in court.
So on the one end, we've got an individual who in able-bodied competition constitutes one of the 15 to 18 fastest people in the world, and is 1.84 meters tall and is pictured with arms out crossing a finishing line. On the other hand of the spectrum, we see an individual who is significantly disabled. He does not have lower legs. He has stumps. And he has stumps which are problematic at that. And he is 1.5 meters tall. So you've got a paradox. You've got a paradox of an individual who is supremely able, and you've got an individual who is significantly disabled.
It was the able-looking Oscar Pistorius who appeared in court on the day after the shooting. It was a bail hearing, but the prosecutor, Gerry Nel, argued that the authorities should deny bail and charge him with premeditated murder. After an unprecedented hearing in which much of the principal evidence was revealed, Pistorius was granted bail on stringent conditions. He pleaded not guilty. Over the next few months, his every move, every gesture, every reaction would be reflected, shown, tweeted, and shared immediately, and then regurgitated and shared and tweeted and shown once again, as for the first time in South Africa, a criminal trial was beamed live and continuously to the world on a dedicated television channel. The cameras showed the judge, prosecutor, defense lawyers, and defendant. Viewers could hear the voices of the witnesses, but they weren't on camera. It was in the early days of the trial that a picture began to emerge of what happened on the night of the shooting, and the prosecution began to make its case.
My lady, just after three, I woke up from a woman's terrible screams.
First witness, Michelle Berger, who lived in the same gated community as Oscar Pistorius with her husband.
I sat upright in bed, and my husband also woke up from the screams. She screamed terribly and she yelled for help. Just after her scream, my lady, I heard four shots. It was four gunshots that I heard.
Another witness, Estelle van der Merwe, testified that she heard a loud argument an hour earlier.
My lady, I woke up around 1:56 in the morning. I heard sounds. It seemed like somebody was involved in a fight on a baglery or what. And these people were talking in loud voices, my lady. It lasted for about an hour. My lady, I was irritated by that because I was supposed to go. I was supposed to sleep.
I get my net.
At some stage, I placed a pillow on top of my head with the hope of falling asleep once more, or again, my lady. And around about 3 o'clock in the morning, I heard four gunshots, my lady.
Another neighbor, Dr. Johan Stipp, described the scene that greeted him when he entered the house after he too had heard gunshots.
As I approached the lady, there was a man on his knees on the left side. He had his left hand on the right groin, and his right hand's second and third fingers in the mouth. And I remember the first thing he said when I got there was that he said, "I shot her. I thought she was a burglar and I shot her."
At issue in this trial was not whether the athlete had shot Rivas Steenkamp. The issue was his culpability. Prosecutor Gerry Nel argued that he'd shot her in anger after an argument. Defense lawyer Barry Roo argued that he'd killed her by mistake because he thought she was a burglar. Throughout the trial, the state and the defense called experts and witnesses that contradicted each other on points such as when Riva ate her last meal and whether she could have screamed between the gunshots. Defense lawyer Barry Rue also argued, with some success, that the police mismanaged the crime scene. The prosecution sought to expose Pistorius as a different man to the one seen on the track. He faced three other charges for firing a weapon in a public place and another for the illegal possession of ammunition. He could get up to 5 years for each of the first two charges and up to 15 for the third charge. His former girlfriend Samantha Taylor told the court about an earlier incident when a policeman touched Oscar Pistorius' gun.
What did he do?
He shouted at the policeman because he said that he was not allowed to touch his gun.
He said the policeman was not allowed to touch his gun?
Yes. After we left there, the Oscar and Darren were pretty anxious and a little bit irritated with the policeman. About 2 minutes after, I saw Oscar take his gun and shoot out of the car roof.
Was there a sound?
A very, very loud sound.
What did he say?
They both laughed.
Now, this relationship, how did it end? Now, finally end?
Finally? At the end?
Yeah, at the end.
He cheated on me with Reva Steenkamp.
Oscar Pistorius and Reva Steenkamp appeared to be a golden couple. They exchanged loving messages via text and WhatsApp, but there was a darker side to their blossoming romance, revealed in texts sent by Ms. Steenkamp to the athlete, which he later read out in full in court.
Said, I'm not 100% sure why I'm sitting down to type you a message first, but perhaps it says a lot about what's going on here. Today was one of my best friend's engagements and I wanted to stay longer and I was enjoying myself, but it's over now. You have picked on me incessantly since you got back from Cape Town and I understand that you were sick, but it's nasty. Yesterday wasn't nice for either of us, but we managed to pull through and communicate well enough to show we care. To show our care for each other is greater than the drama that attacked us. I was not flirting with anyone today. I feel sick that you suggested that and that you made a scene at the table and made us leave early. I'm terribly disappointed in how the day ended and how you left me. We are living in a double standard relationship where you can be mad about how I feel, about how I deal with stuff when you are very quick to act cold and offish when you are unhappy. Every 5 seconds I hear how you dated another chick. You really have dated a lot of people, yet you get upset if I mention one funny story with a long-time boyfriend. I do everything to make you happy and to not say anything to rock the boat with you. You do everything to throw tantrums in front of people. I have been upset by you for 2 days now. I'm so upset I left Darren's party early. So upset. I can't get that day back. I'm scared of you sometimes and how you snap at me and of how you will react to me. You make me happy 90% of the time and I think we are amazing together. I'm the girl who let go with you even when I was scared out of my mind too. I'm the girl who fell in love with you and wanted to tell you this weekend. But I'm also the girl who gets sidestepped When I feel you think you have me, so why try anymore? I get snapped at and told my accent and voices are annoying. I touch your neck to show you I care. You tell me to stop. Stop chewing gum. Don't do this. Don't do this. Don't do that. From the outside, I think it looks like we are a struggle, and maybe that's what we are. I just want to love and be loved. Be happy and make someone so happy. Maybe we can't do that for each other, because right now I know you aren't happy, and I certainly very unhappy and sad.
Now, right from the very start of the trial, Oscar Pistorius sat with his head bowed, a somber, sad-looking figure. And he reacted viscerally to testimony from the witness box. He cried, he convulsed, he flinched. All these gestures were shown, shared, and speculated upon. But the most extreme reaction was when he retched into a green bucket as images of Reva's dead body were shown. These images were so disturbing that the pathologist, citing the law and ethical considerations, refused to have them broadcast outside the courtroom. Judge Masipa agreed absolutely.
As of now, I can give the order that there shall be no broadcast of the evidence of Mrs. Simon. That applies to Twitter. I hope I'm making that very clear.
The judge's handling of the trial was in the spotlight. Judge Thokozile Matilda Masipa had earlier careers as a social worker and crime reporter. She became the second black woman to be made a judge in South Africa in 1998 and is currently the second most senior female judge in the country. In her red gown and neatly cornrowed hair, she, along with her two assessors, represent the face of justice in South Africa. The jury system was scrapped in South Africa in the late 1960s, and assessors, highly trained advocates and former magistrates for the most part, are used to help the judge assess the facts. They play a role in the verdict and can overrule the judge, but they do not play a role in sentencing. In the course of the case, Judge Masipa revealed herself to be compassionate but crisp, stopping proceedings at various times to allow the defendant time to recover his composure. At one stage, she adjourned court early, remarking that he looked very tired.
Well, he does look exhausted. He does sound exhausted. We'll adjourn until tomorrow at 9:30.
Oscar Pistorius' state of mind during the trial was much remarked upon, and many watching seized on every twitch and retch as a sign of his guilt or innocence. But it is his state of mind leading up to the killing that is used to determine culpability in law. The prosecution tried to portray Pistorius as a gun-crazy narcissist through the three other charges relating to possession of illegal ammunition and discharging a firearm in a public place. They made sure the judge knew Pistorius was aware of the law on guns, as firearms expert Sean Patrick Rentz made clear when prosecutor Gerry Nel called him to the witness box.
Question number 8. List the four safety rules in order of importance. How did the accused answer that question?
He answered correctly. Always point in a safe direction. Always keep your finger off the trigger. Always treat a firearm as if it's loaded. And always know your target and what lies beyond.
Oscar Pistorius had shot several times through the door to his bathroom. The prosecution argued that Reva Steenkamp was his target and that he knew it was her standing behind that door. Nell's question to police ballistics expert Chris Mangena: where was Reva when the first bullet hit her?
What was the position of the deceased in terms of the door?
In terms of the door, my lady, she was standing in front of the door, facing the door.
And in your reconstruction, what then?
That bullet penetrated and broke the hip bone of the deceased. Now, with this wound, if the bone is the hip bone is broken completely, it causes her to fall down from this, because this leg will not be able to stand up.
So your opinion is after the infliction of the wound A, what happened to the deceased?
After the infliction of a wound mark, the wound on the hip, she fell down on top of the magazine rack in a seated position, or the bullet hole mark B was shot, and the bullet missed her. The two more bullets, I couldn't determine which one was fired first, which one was fired the last. But in this instance, the deceased was most probably seated in a defensive position.
Up to now, we'd heard how Pistorius fired four shots through a closed door, in spite of the rules of firearm safety. Witnesses said they heard a woman's terrible screams after raised voices in the middle of the night. And the defense and prosecution tussled over how far apart those screams were between the first shot and the next three. One of Pistorius' ex-girlfriends testified that he'd twice woken her, gun in hand, fearing that there were intruders in his home. But only one person alive knows what really happened that night.
Sir, please state your full name, Mr. Record.
My name is Oscar Leonard Carl Pistorius.
Do you swear that the evidence about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? If so, raise your right hand and cease to help me God.
So help me God.
On April the 7th, day 16 of the trial, Oscar Pistorius took the stand.
My lady, if I may just please start off with my evidence by tendering an apology.
What is the apology that you want to tender, Mr. Pistorius?
I would like to take this opportunity to apologize to Mrs. and Mr. Steenkamp, to Reva's family, to those of you who knew her who are here today. I'd like to apologize and say that there's not a moment, and there hasn't been a moment since this tragedy happened, that I haven't thought about your family. I wake up every morning, and you're the first people I think of, the first people I pray for. I can't imagine the pain and the sorrow and the emptiness that I've caused you and your family. I was simply trying to protect Reva. I can promise that when she went to bed that night, she felt loved.
Reva's mother, June, sat expressionless in court every day, flanked by prominent leaders of the Women's League of the governing African National Congress. The death of her daughter had become cause célèbre for campaigners trying to stop violence against women. Up to now, the face of a battered woman in South Africa was that of a black woman. June Steenkamp's composure was striking, especially when juxtaposed with the defendant's extreme emotional distress. So upset did Pistorius become at various times that his lawyer, Barry Rue, asked for an adjournment more than once in the course of the trial. When we return, Oscar Pistorius presents his side of the story. Did he kill a scared and cowering woman in the heat of an argument?
You killed her. You shot and killed her. Won't you take responsibility for that?
Or was he afraid, vulnerable on his painful stumps, as he fired four shots into a locked bathroom door?
The first thing that ran through my mind was that I needed to arm myself, that I needed to protect Reva and I, that I needed to get my gun. I was scared that the person was going to come out, or people were going to come out at that point.
More of the trial of Oscar Pistorius with me, Audrey Brown, after the news.
Weekends on the BBC World Service.
On the forum, we tackle the very big questions of our age and the very small.
A nanometer is 1/1,000,000th of a meter.
In the next program, we explore nanotechnology, minuscule probes and sensors invisible to the naked eye.
You use special microscopes which detect the object by feeling it, because many of these objects are smaller than the wavelength of light.
Nanoscience may be about the unbelievably small, but the impact on our lives could be huge.
Diagnostic devices that are just a few nanometers big that can sense the difference between health and disease.
I'm Bridget Kendall, and this week I ask a gathering of nanoscientists how their work could change the world. The Forum, Challenges of Nanoscience, online from Saturday on bbcworldservice.com.
Coming up in part two of the story of the trial of Oscar Pistorius, the athlete is subjected to a no-holds-barred cross-examination by the prosecutor, Gerinel.
You killed her. You shot and killed her. Won't you take responsibility for that? Say yes. I shot and killed Reva Steenkamp.
Join me, Audrey Brown, after the World Service News, when the trial of Oscar Pistorius comes to its dramatic conclusion.
BBC News with Stuart McIntosh. The family of Reva Steenkamp, who was shot dead by the South African athlete Oscar Pistorius, has reacted angrily after he was found guilty of culpable homicide but cleared of murder. June Steenkamp said there'd been no justice for her daughter. Oscar Pistorius remains free on bail until sentencing next month. The Pakistani army says it's arrested 10 people in connection with the attack on Malala Yousafzai, the schoolgirl who was shot in the head 2 years ago. A spokesman said the men had been working for the leader of the Pakistani Taliban. Tributes have been paid to the Reverend Ian Paisley, a dominant force in Northern Ireland politics, who's died at the age of 88. A man who was once one of Ian Paisley's bitterest foes, the Republican politician and former IRA commander Martin McGuinness, said he'd lost a friend. In Canada, the mayor of Toronto, Rob Ford, who made global headlines last year for confessing his addiction to crack cocaine, has dropped out of the race for re-election because of a sudden illness. He's been diagnosed with a tumour in his abdomen. He says his brother will run in his place. A number of people are feared dead in the Nigerian city of Lagos after the collapse of a building linked to one of the country's most famous evangelists, T.B. Joshua. Reports say several bodies have been removed from the rubble. Thousands of people regularly attend services led by the preacher, attracted by his purported healing powers. Officials in Brazil say they'll continue a project to establish a permanent police presence in the slums of Rio de Janeiro, despite the death of a senior police commander. He was shot during a confrontation with armed members of a drugs gang on Thursday. The Calcutta High Court has quashed charges of rape against an internationally successful Indian athlete, Pinky Pramanik, after gender tests proved she was female. BBC News.
Welcome back to the second part of this look back at the trial that had millions around the world following on Facebook, on Twitter, and on a dedicated television channel. Over the next half hour, we'll hear how Oscar Pistorius tried to convince the court that he loved Riva Steenkamp, that he wanted to build a life with her, and how that dream was shattered. In the early hours of Valentine's Day, mistaking her for a burglar, he reached for his gun and shot her through a locked bathroom door. In often extremely emotional testimony, Pistorius described the moments that led up to the shooting. This was the key to his version of events, so let's hear it in detail.
I woke up my lady in the early hours of the 14th of February. It was extremely warm in my room. I sat up in bed. I noticed that the fans were still running and that the door was still open, although the lights had been switched off. Reva was still awake, or she was obviously not sleeping. She rolled over to me and she said, "Can't you sleep, my bubba?" And I said, "No, I can't." And I got out on my side of the bed. I got to the fans, where the fans were. I took the small fan, the floor fan, I placed it pretty much just inside the room, and I took the bigger tripod fan and I placed it in the bedroom. I then proceeded to close the sliding doors and lock them. I then drew the curtains. It was at this point that I heard a window open in the bathroom. It sounded like the window sliding open, and then I could hear the window hit the frame as if it had slid to a point where it can't slide anymore. So,
What did you think at the time, Mr. Pistorius?
My lady, that's the moment that everything changed. I thought that there was a burglar that was gaining entry into my home. I think initially I just froze. I didn't really know what to do. I'd heard this noise. I interpreted it as being somebody was climbing into the bathroom. There's no door between the bathroom and my room. It's all one. There's a passageway, but there's no door. There's a toilet door, but there's no barrier between me and the bathroom. It's one room. I immediately thought that somebody, if they were at the window to where the passage, entrance of the passage was, could be three, four meters. They could be there at any moment. And the first thing that ran through my mind was that I needed to arm myself, that I needed to protect Reva and I that I needed to get my gun. I was looking down the passage. I was scared that the person was going to come out, or people were going to come out at that point. I rushed as quick as I could. I couldn't see anything in the room. So I ran with my hand out in front of me, at times touching the floor. And then when I got to my bed, I made my way along the side of my bed. I grabbed my firearm from underneath the bed, and it had a canvas holster on it. I immediately took it out the holster. At that point, I wanted to just put myself between, get back to where the passage was so that I could put myself between the person that had gained access to my house and Reva. When I got just before the passage wall, I remember slowing down because I was scared that at that point this person, during the time that I'd got from, that I'd left the amp to where I got my firearm, could have possibly already been in the passage, in the closet passage. So I slowed down and I had my firearm extended in front of me just as I left my bed. I whispered for Reva to get down and phone the police. As I entered where the passage is, where the closet is to the, where I entered the passage, where the closet is to the to the bathroom. It was at that point that I was just overcome with fear, and I started screaming and shouting for the burglar or the intruders to get out of my house.
Prosecutor Gerry Nel, pugnacious and meticulous, made clear from the start that Oscar Pistorius was going to have to do better than that to convince the court of his innocence. He began his cross-examination on a seemingly innocuous note.
Yes, Mr. Nell.
As it pleases, my lady. Mr. Pistorius, you were and you still are one of the most recognized faces in the world. Do you agree?
I agree, my lady.
You are a model for sportsmen, disabled and able-bodied sportsmen all over the world.
I think I was, my lady. I've made a terrible mistake and...
You made a mistake?
That's correct.
You killed a person, that's what you did, isn't it?
I made a mistake, my lady.
You killed Reva Steenkamp, that's what you did?
I made a mistake, my lady.
You're repeating it three times. What was your mistake?
My mistake is that I took Reva's life, my lady.
You killed her, you shot and killed her. Won't you take responsibility for that?
I did, my lady.
Now say it then. Say yes. I shot and killed Reva Steenkamp.
I did, my lady.
Okay.
One of the trial's most explosive moments began when Nell lobbed an apparently bizarre question at the accused.
What is a zombie stopper?
I have no idea what a zombie stopper is.
Have you never been in the presence of any person using the word zombie stopper?
Not that I can recall, my lady.
Have you ever seen a video of yourself in the presence of people referring to a zombie stopper?
I've never seen a video of myself where someone in the video has referred to a zombie stopper as far as I can remember, my lady.
If there was such a video on Sky News showing you shooting and somebody saying, talking about a zombie stopper, would you be surprised?
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm saying I can't remember. If you can show me a video like that and I'm in the presence of that person, then I can agree with that.
Gladly. Can we show the video, please?
And with that, Gerry Nel revealed a side of Oscar Pistorius that shocked many and profoundly unsettled the accused.
Oscar Pistorius, as you've never seen him before. And in these pictures uncovered by Sky News, the athlete shows his prowess at handling a gun.
Hold on. Tell me, you ready?
You're ready.
Okay, got it.
Screams of delight, but listen to the voice of a man who sounds very much like Oscar Pistorius.
It's a lot softer than brain, but it's like a zombie stopper.
What we can see there is the effect the ammunition had on a watermelon. It exploded. Am I right?
That's correct, my lady.
You know that the same happened to River's head. It exploded. Have a look. I'm going to show you, Mr. Pistorius. It had the exact same effect, the bullet that went into her head.
My lady, I was there that night.
That's it. Have a look there, Mr. I know you don't want to because you don't want to take responsibility, but it's time that you look at it. Take responsibility for what you've done, Mr. Pistorius.
My lady, I've taken responsibility by me waiting and not wanting to live my life, but waiting for my time on this stand to tell my story for the respect of Reva and for myself. I've taken responsibility, but I will not look at a picture where I'm tormented by what I saw and felt that night. As I picked Reva up, my fingers touched her head. I remember. I don't have to look at a picture. I was there.
It's the same thing as the watermelon.
That graphic image of a bloodied Reva visibly upset her mother June, who up until now had been stoic. Prior to the shooting, Reva's life seemed to have been going from strength to strength. A model as well as a law graduate, she had been due to appear in a celebrity reality TV show. Her friends described her as someone with both beauty and brains. She described herself as a child of God. Her final tweet on the 13th of February 2013 was an excited look forward to Valentine's Day. "What do you have up your sleeve for love tomorrow?" she asked. The man whom she spent her last night with, Oscar Pistorius, was often reduced to tears over the next few days with Harry Nell's insistence that he express his culpability. Nell jabbed at the athlete, ridiculing, taunting him. His style of questioning made sense to those who know him as a wrestling coach for high school students.
Now, Mr. Pistorius, yesterday I asked you a question of who we should blame for what happened, and you indicated that we should blame you.
That's correct, my lady.
Who should be blamed for the fact that you shot her?
I don't know, my lady. I was scared.
No, I'm asking you. You said we should blame you for having taken her life. That's what you said yesterday, am I right?
That's correct, my lady.
Who should be blamed for you having shot her?
My lady, I believe that there was a threat that was on my life.
So, once again we shouldn't blame you for the fact that you shot her. Am I right?
I agree with Mr. Noel, my lady.
That we shouldn't blame you. Who should we then blame? We should blame somebody or something. Who should be blamed?
I'm not sure, my lady.
Should we blame Reva?
No, my lady.
She never told you she's going to the toilet. Should we not blame her?
No, my lady.
Should we blame the government?
I don't know who you want to blame. No, lady.
I'm asking you. You must be blaming somebody for this.
I don't, my lady. I believe there was a threat.
But we cannot blame you for having pulled the trigger. No, we cannot blame you for having shot and killed Reva. You're not to blame.
My lady, I believe that there was someone coming out to attack me.
But then the answer is, yes, Mr. Nell, we cannot blame me. That's the answer. Is that the answer?
I've given that answer to Mr. Nell already, my lady.
And so it went on for 5 days of merciless cross-examination. When Oscar Pistorius finally left the stand in early April, those convinced of his guilt were even more convinced. Gerinel had left him no place to hide, and all the defense could do was move on. Barry Roux's earlier victories in exposing shoddy police work and unreliable police witnesses long forgotten. One of the pivotal moments came when Gerinel effectively hijacked a possible tactic that the defense could use to argue in mitigation of sentence. It came during the testimony of an expert witness for the defense, psychiatrist Meryl Foster. She told the court that Oscar Pistorius had been suffering from an anxiety disorder since he was an infant.
It is my opinion, my lady, that Mr. Pistorius has an anxiety disorder. Individuals with an anxiety disorder work hard to control their environment and be very prepared in order to alleviate their levels of anxiety. What makes Mr. Pistorius different from other offenders or from the normal person is that he has a physical vulnerability and a generalized anxiety disorder. So his reaction to situations would be different. I'm not saying that this constitutes a mental illness. When exposed to a threat, Mr. Pistorius is more likely to respond with a fight response rather than a flight response, as his physical capacity for flight is limited.
For somebody that suffering from general anxiety disorder and would possess guns, that would make him a dangerous person.
Yes.
Yes. And having done matters before, I'm sure that you also agree that a person suffering from a general anxiety disorder would be a danger to society if he's has access to a gun.
Yes.
Prosecutor Gerinel said the psychiatrist's evidence meant that it was important for Pistorius's mental state to be assessed by professionals, so the general anxiety disorder, or GAD, could either be considered or discounted as a reason for his reaction on the night of the shooting.
She specified that the diagnosis was that the accused was suffering from GAD. She indicated yesterday, my lady, that her diagnosis is directly relevant to the accused's version, and that, in her opinion, the GAD may have affected the accused's ability to act in accordance with an appreciation of the wrongfulness of his act.
I am satisfied that a case has been made out for the application or the relief as sought by the state, and I shall grant that order.
Some saw Nell's move as a clever ploy, while the defense called it a ruse. I'm Audrey Brown, and you're listening to the trial of Oscar Pistorius.
The murder trial of the South African athlete Oscar Pistorius resumes in Pretoria today, after a six-week break, while experts assessed his mental health. His defense argued
Oscar Pistorius was evaluated by three psychiatrists and one psychologist. This whole evaluation came as a result of a cross-examination.
We pick up the story after an adjournment of more than a month, while a panel of psychiatrists assessed whether or not Oscar Pistorius was mentally impaired when he shot Reeva Steenkamp on Valentine's Day in 2013. State psychiatrists ruled that he was capable of telling right from wrong. His lawyers accepted the finding, and Barry Roux continued his defense by calling Dr. Gerald Alexander Versveld. Dr. Versveld had known and treated Oscar Pistorius since he was a baby. Dr. Versveld's testimony was to try to establish just how vulnerable a profoundly disabled Oscar Pistorius is.
He could not walk on the industrial carpeting. When trying to stand without holding on, he had difficulty standing and was moving all the time. The biggest stride he could take, bearing weight on the left stump while holding on to something, measured 23 centimeters. While holding on to something and bearing weight on his right stump, the maximum stride he could take was 33 centimeters. The left leg actually buckled when he put weight on it. When standing or walking, he was bending his back forwards. In walking stance, he measured 1.44 meters tall. Standing in his shoes and prosthesis, he measured 1.86 meters tall. He weighed 73 kilograms when not wearing his prostheses. It was difficult to weigh him because he was unable to stand still on the scale without holding on. He weighed 79 kilograms wearing his prostheses, fully clothed and in shoes. He is battling to walk. If you see how he's walking, he's battling to walk. And for him to turn around is quite a process. I actually asked him to turn 180 degrees, and I counted seven movements for him to do that. It is quite a process.
In a controversy close to the end of the trial, many people had an opportunity to see Pistorius on his stumps when an Australian television channel aired leaked footage of him reenacting events on the night he shot Reeva. The footage showed the athlete shouting and running on his stumps as he simulated holding a gun. The video, which was not used in court, had been used to create a computer model of what happened on the night of the shooting. Pistorius's defense team condemned the airing of the footage, which it said was a breach of trust and privacy. Defense lawyer Barry Rue went on to question a witness about whether the screams heard by various witnesses could have been uttered by a man or a woman, much to the amusement of various social media commentators. The advocate, frustrated and annoyed, but dogged to the end, closed his case with an implicit criticism of the decision to broadcast proceedings.
We put on record, and it's not that the court can do anything about it, just that it's on record that we were unable to call a number of witnesses who simply refused to testify because they say they don't want their... They protected against television, but they don't want their voices all over the world. We had to take a decision. There's nothing that we can do about it. So we just put that before you. And with that in mind, then we close the case for the defense.
His defense at an end, after having been found mentally competent to understand his actions, Oscar Pistorius, broken and, by some accounts, broke, waited for his fate to be decided. If convicted, what would his sentence be? If acquitted, what about the rest of his life? He tweeted an insight into his state of mind to his more than 350,000 followers on Twitter. He began with the words, "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted," and followed that with a passage from the book Man's Search for Meaning, written by Holocaust survivor Viktor Frankl. I quote, "I understood how a man who has nothing left in this world still may know bliss, be it for only a brief moment, in the contemplation of his beloved." It only remained to hear the closing arguments both from the prosecution and the defense. And so on the 7th and 8th of August, Gerry Nel and Barry Rue presented their final arguments.
We have the accused armed and ready. That is the reasonable man. Is a reasonable man standing in a bathroom looking at a toilet door, armed and ready to fire. If that person is disabled or not, the fact that he is armed is the fact that the court should take into account, and that he has his firearm pointed towards the door. Now, a reasonable man, a disabled man, reasonable abled man, a reasonable woman, a reasonable whoever, will not fire. The court will not accept that that person would fire without cause. Now, what we have here is there was no cause. Nobody came out of the door. What we have, objectively, we have an unarmed, vulnerable woman shot and killed in a toilet. That's objectively, that's what we have. So, my lady, as far as objective test is concerned, it's not the objective test of a disabled man that cannot get away, that's acting. We have a disabled man with a firearm ready to shoot. It would have been different, my lady, if that door opened and he fired. Because then at least there's something, some objective instance that the court could look at. But we don't have it yet. So, my lady, he cannot escape that.
Now you're standing at that door. You're vulnerable. You have the effects of the slow burn over many years. You're anxious. You're trained as an athlete to react to sound. Sprinters. We all know him. you trained. He says, take all those factors into account. And he stands now with his finger ready to fire if necessary. And he stands there, and then I made the noise louder. Now two things can happen. If I stand behind someone with his finger on that trigger and he's in a fearful state and I make clap my hands behind him, I'm very happy to make the submission that in some instance the person will fire reflexive, in some instance not.
And then Judge Masipa gave her verdict.
The state alleged that in September 2012, on a public road, the accused unlawfully discharged a firearm through the open sunroof. On this count, the state failed to prove the guilt of the accused beyond reasonable doubt. In respect of count three, the state alleged that in January 2013, at Church's restaurant, the accused unlawfully discharged a firearm. In my view, the state has proved beyond reasonable doubt that the accused contravened Section 1, Count 4. The allegation was that the accused was unlawfully in possession of ammunition. In respect of this count, the state failed to prove beyond reasonable doubt. In Count 1, the accused is charged with premeditated murder. The timelines, as set out in the chronology of events, tip the scales in favor of the accused version in general. Viewed in its totality, the evidence failed to establish that the accused had the requisite intention to kill the deceased, let alone with premeditation. How could the accused reasonably have foreseen that the shot he fired would kill the deceased? Clearly, he did not subjectively foresee this as a possibility. The evidence of various witnesses who gave evidence on what they heard, in what sequence, and when, proved to be unreliable. The accused acted negligently when he fired shots into the toilet door, knowing that there was someone behind the door and that there was very little room in which to maneuver. Mr. Pistorius, please stand up. Having regard to the totality of this evidence, in this matter, the unanimous decision of this court is the following. One, on count one, murder read, the accused is found not guilty and is discharged. Instead, he is found guilty of culpable homicide.
I'm Audrey Brown, and you've been listening to the trial of Oscar Pistorius on the BBC World Service. The producer was Keith Moore.